Okay, that was Nirvana with Downer, and now we have something that's an upper. A new friend that I just met came into the studio from Tacoma Park. And what is your name, sir?
Nick Sarwark.
Okay, Nick, tell us why you're here.
I'm here because I'm from the Libertarian Party of Maryland, and one of our members has been around on campus petitioning to get us back on the ballot. Maryland has some ballot access laws that every couple of years, parties that try and present an alternative option have to go and jump through a few state-run hoops in order to just put us on the ballot. So we're out there doing that, trying to get back on so that we can, you know, give the voters some real hope that there's something out there other than just the same old, same old.
Yeah. Were libertarians ever on the Maryland ballot before?
Yeah, we've actually been on the ballot most of the time from, the last 20 years, give or take.
Yeah.
Every time they kick us off, we get back on. You know, it's kind of like that Chumbawamba song that everyone hates now.
What song?
Tub Thumper.
Oh.
They knock us down, we get back up. They knock us down, we get back up.
Maybe we can find that song to play it later.
But the cool thing is that the Green Party of Maryland actually, three years ago, sued the state of Maryland because their laws were a little restrictive, and they're in the same boat that we are. And just this last year, the court decision came back and said that they can't make us petition to get on the ballot as a party and then make our candidate petition to also get on the ballot again. Double petitioning is not required anymore, which is pretty cool. I don't know if you know about it, but the last gubernatorial election, our candidate, Spear Lancaster, we had a campaign budget total for the whole year of about $40,000, and about 27 of it was spent just getting him on the ballot. We had to get like 40,000 signatures.
Wow. Did you make those 40,000 signatures?
We did. The only real issue was that that's almost $30,000 that we can't spend getting out a libertarian message and showing people that there really is a third alternative for their vote, you know, and giving people some hope that it's not Tweedledee or Tweedledum anymore.
Yeah. When did you first get turned on to the Libertarian Party?
Oh, my gosh. I want to say it was back when I was in school. My father, who lives out in Phoenix, and told me a little bit about it. And I went to school in Maryland, just down the street at Columbia Union College. And I just looked up the state party and talked to some people, and they seemed really cool. The philosophy was so different than anything else that I had seen in politics. And, I mean, geez, when I was in college, I couldn't care less about politics. And, I mean, why should I? The Republicans are going to steal my money and break into my bedroom at night, and the Democrats are going to steal my money and not break into my bedroom at night. They'll be busy stealing my money. And it just, you know, and not that any of it mattered anyway, because none of it really affects you when you're in school. It's not until you get out that it becomes really big deal. But
unless your tuition gets increased by 25%, then it affects you.
That affects you a lot. And, yeah, it's funny that when you look at the tuition increases and you look at the budget that had to be cut, because basically Maryland has no money now, like the whole state has no money, it's funny that you'll notice that the cuts didn't come at the administrative level at the university. All the administrators kept their money. It was only the students, who really don't have any political voice, who kind of get the shaft.
Yeah. Okay, so you say that, we do get the shaft. We're used to that, though. Okay, so you say that the Libertarian Party's philosophy really appeals to you, and then it's cool and different.
Yeah.
Let's talk about how it's cool and different, because I don't really know that much about the Libertarian Party.
Okay, well.
And I'm sure other people don't either, so let's inform them.
Cool. The Libertarian Party, really, our philosophy comes down to two things. It's responsibility and freedom. And basically, fundamentally, we have the idea that you know how to run your life better than anyone else knows how to run your life. The government doesn't know how to run your life. I don't know how to run your life. You know how to run your life. And for the most part, you should be left alone to run your life how you want to. We also believe that it's unjust for anyone to force you to do something. If you're not hurting anyone, for someone to force you to do something that you don't want to do in the name of whatever is generally unjust. I mean, most people would agree with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So every time you have some sort of government intervention that says you can't do this, you have to do this because we think it's good for you, it takes a little bit away from your freedom, and it takes a little bit away from what makes us so lucky to live in this country, as opposed to, you know, a place like China where you have to ask the government before you're even allowed to move.
Well, what are libertarians' stance, or what is their stance on taxation then?
Our stance on taxation is really, there ought to be less of it, that's for sure. At a fundamental level, every time you're taxing someone, you are, in essence, forcing them to give you money to do something you want to do. I mean, if I came up to you and said, hey, Jen, can you give me $5 so I can go get a sandwich? You can either say yes or no. I'm free to ask you. As soon as I come up and say, hey, Jen, you have to give me $5 to go get a sandwich, then I'm forcing you to give me the money. And it's still forcing you to give me the money, whether it's just me or if it's me and like a bunch of my friends that won an election that said, hey, now you have to give us $5,000 so that we can go build a stadium.
Well, does the Libertarian Party believes in lowering taxation? Do they believe in no taxation at all?
Ideally, in an ideal world, and we're never going to live in an ideal world, we'd have a system where you didn't get taxed for things that you didn't use. So if you use a toll road, you pay to ride on the toll road. But if you don't drive on the toll road, you don't pay to drive on the toll road. And it would really let people get that choice back to people. And you get to choose what you want to do with your money. You get to choose whether or not you want to support building a new stadium for some football team or not.
Well, what is the stance on public institutions that are funded by taxation, such as museums, maybe, or like a public transportation system?
It depends, really. I guess it would be on an individual basis. In Maryland, at least, I know that we have a constitutional guarantee of public education, so that's not going away because the people of the state of Maryland decided that we should have public education, and that's fine, really. The things that really are the bigger deal as a libertarian are those things where it's just so ridiculous. In Harford County, I just found this out yesterday, no business is allowed to be open 24 hours. There's no 24-hour Home Depots. There's no 24-hour drug stores. There's no 24-hour anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Harford County bureaucrats have essentially decided that we just don't want 24-hour businesses, and no one is free to open a business 24 hours. There was actually a Home Depot that was open 24 hours,
mm-hmm.
and they were just paying the fine, like $1,000 a day. They'd pay a fine.
Wow. They can definitely afford to do that.
Yeah, well, they just jacked up the fine so that now they have to close.
Oh.
But why? What's the point of, if you're not hurting anyone, why would you, how can you justify stopping someone from offering a service like that?
That's true. But has anybody, ever called you guys anarchists, or would you consider yourself anarchist?
I wouldn't consider myself an anarchist. I'm sure that there are probably people who consider themselves anarchists who are attracted to our message of, you know, smaller government and more freedom. But really, it's that whole question is so far down the road from where we're at now. I mean, right now we're giving billions of dollars to McDonald's to go build more McDonald's overseas, and you know, we have problems with corporate welfare. We have problems with an insane war on drugs that's just, like, locking up. I think we imprison more people than any other civilized country in the world, even Russia, actually, now. We have more prisoners than them. And most of them are in there for basically choosing to do something that may or may not be stupid. But we can't throw people in jail for being stupid. There'd be no one left on the street.
That's true. I myself would probably be in jail right now because I can be stupid at times.
I would probably also be in jail.
Maybe we should all go to the police station and
turn ourselves up.
Yeah. Okay.
Lock me up. I'm dumb.
Yeah. Well, how is the search going at University of Maryland for finding libertarians?
It's going pretty well, actually. We have a really active college group. Back last year, we did bring our candidate for governor, Spiro Lancaster. He was here a couple times, and he spoke. And
oh, wow.
Got a really good reception. And our petition drive's going great. We have to get 10,000 valid signatures to get back on the ballot, and we are just over the 10,000 mark now for raw signatures. Obviously, some of them people will have moved or they would have changed their voter registration. So we have to get a few more. But we're really going through that final push. And with the new change in the ballot access law, what that means is as soon as we're back on the ballot, we can start running candidates. We don't have to get more signatures and more signatures and more signatures. And we can really present another option. You know, it just, it gives people another choice. It's kind of like if, let's say Howard Dean, for example, wasn't running for president, then there would be no candidate who is clearly articulating an anti-war message, other than the Libertarian candidate. We always articulate an anti-war message. But right now, in the media, that the reason I think that there's so much popularity there is he is the only person really presenting an alternative. And that's the role that the Libertarian Party plays. We present an alternative to the government you've always had and you're probably always going to get if you keep always voting for those same people.
Yeah, that's very important. Who has been like a recently successful Libertarian candidate, if you can think of any?
Gosh.
Or what kind of success are you seeing? Maybe not winning.
We're seeing more success at the local level. People like Bill Masters in Colorado, who's he's sheriff of, gosh, I don't remember the county, but he's been, he just recently got reelected sheriff, and he has actually been one of the most high-profile law enforcement officers in the country who's come out against the war on drugs.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a really interesting story. What happened was a little girl was abducted from his county, and he went to the FBI's missing children center where they try and track these children. And he looked at all the equipment and all the stuff that they had and said, wow, this is really great that we put so much effort and time and resources into finding these missing and exploited children. I think that's awesome. And the guy who was running some of the equipment looked at him and said, well, actually about 60% of the people in here are from the DEA. They use this equipment to try and find drug dealers. And he was just flabbergasted that we had such a skewed priority in this country that we were willing to redirect resources away from finding missing and exploited children over to instead going after someone who's selling some pot.
Yeah.
So he's been a really strong proponent of ending the war on drugs and, you know, bringing us back to something like sanity in this country.
Yeah. What kinds of stances do the Libertarians have in this election, maybe? Like, what? I guess you'd support Howard Dean, right?
No. I probably support – we have two candidates who are currently vying for the Libertarian nomination. There's a guy named Gary Nolan, who's actually his day job. He's a radio host. And then a guy named Michael Badnarik, who's – I don't remember what he does for work. But they're both traveling around the country trying to seek the nomination. We nominate by convention – this coming year in July, so we'll pick one and run them out. But what positions do we take?
What would be their agenda?
Well, the first agenda would be to get us out of these all this foreign intervention stuff that we've been doing, stuff like Iraq. Basically, we don't feel as a party that we are justified in running around the world trying to find someone that we need to beat up on today. Unless someone is actually attacking you, you're not supposed to be able to go attack them. The idea of a preemptive war is completely unjust. It'd be like, oh no, you have a funny look in your eye, so I just smack you across the head and say, well, she was a direct threat. She was gonna maybe think about maybe hitting me, maybe. And that's what we basically did in Iraq. And I'm not saying that Saddam Hussein's a good guy, but what I will say is that by going in and destabilizing a country in the middle of the Islamic world, at the same time as we're chasing Al-Qaeda down, we've given them like a nice little target to go, and every Al-Qaeda supporter can run in there and then participate in this little guerrilla campaign to kill soldiers from our country. I mean, we've lost more soldiers since we ended hostilities than we lost the whole time we were fighting a war, and it's just going to get worse because people really don't like it when we go and blow up their country. I mean, would you like it if someone just said, you know, George Bush, he's a really crappy president, and he's kind of dangerous, and so we're just going to invade America.
No, I would not like
I mean, regardless of how we feel about George Bush. Yeah.
It'd be nice to have another president besides George Bush, but I'm not willing to forcibly remove him.
Yeah, he's our bad president, and that's kind of, you know, what, even no matter how bad Saddam Hussein was, he was their bad president. And as soon as, right, you know, you're allowed to discipline him, but your neighbors can't just walk over and go, it's a bad kid, and whack him upside the head. That's not, it's not cool. So we would definitely figure out why it is that we're unpopular as a country. I think there are some pretty clear reasons. There's some pretty clear signals that, you know, the way we're perceived overseas, and we could really look a lot better on the world stage just by having a little common sense and not being so quick to, you know, run and shoot the first person that bugs us.
Yeah. I remember Jake.
Yeah, Jake.
Okay. I only talked to him one time, so this is Jake, who's not here right now. Was telling me about gun control issues. What's your stance on gun control?
Our stance on gun control. Well, basically, we believe that, you know, you have a right to your own body. You have a right to defend yourself if someone attacks you. And any time that someone says, I don't know, this is not the best example because College Park's not a horrible neighborhood to be in.
No.
Let's say you live down in Baltimore. You live on sort of in a sketchy part of town. There's a couple of them I hear in Baltimore. And say, you know, they pass a law that says that you aren't allowed to have a gun. Well, what that's essentially doing is saying that, obviously, there are people with guns in Baltimore, whether or not the law is there or not. And if they decide to mug you or break into your house, the government's saying that you don't have the option anymore to defend yourself. You can't defend yourself. You're not allowed. And hopefully we'll get the police there in time. But if we don't, we're sorry. I mean, that's what people who live in the District of Columbia have to deal with every day. There's some really sketchy parts of D.C., and people are getting shot right and left, and really, they're being told that, oh, no, we'll protect you. You don't have to have a gun. You aren't allowed to have a gun, not even to choose to have a gun. But the cops don't show up in time, and people die. I think that's sad.
Do you feel like our gun rules are too strict in this country?
I
personally believe in gun control.
Okay.
But
why is that?
Why?
Yeah.
Because it just seems like a good idea. It's what my head tells me to.
Well, I would probably agree with you that
I probably read more statistics. So.
Well, if you could really get the guns out of everyone's hands, it probably would be a good idea. And you know, the issue is really a lack of choice. It's when you take away the choice from people. I know a lot of people who don't want to own a gun for one reason or another. They feel that, you know, it would be dangerous to have it around the house, or they have kids, or whatever, and that's totally cool. The real issue is that, you know, there are people who do live in sketchy neighborhoods, or people who do go out late at night, or people, you know, who have, you know, women who have stalkers, and we're telling them that, you know, this crazy guy's following you, and the police say they can't do anything about it until he actually does something. But you don't really want to wait for him to actually do something, and you're telling them that they can't have a gun to protect themselves. And I think that's just sort of wrong to take away that choice from them.
Well, that is an interesting viewpoint. I guess it is. It is wrong to take people's personal choices away.
Yep.
But I feel like maybe over time we've been convinced that everybody's crazy.
No, I don't think so.
Handle themselves? I don't know.
I think that's
maybe people are better than we think they are.
I personally believe they are. I think that one of the things that makes government get bigger and makes people get less free is when you take, you know, some crazy person who does something awful, horrible, terrible, and you use that to restrict the freedoms of the rest of us who are all just normal people who are living our lives, who can make our own choices for ourselves. I mean, okay, let's even just follow it for a second. Let's say that the people who would like to run your life are right. That, you know, people in general are a little nutty, they're a little wacky, they can't be trusted with their own freedoms. Well, then how can we trust people to basically run all of our lives? I mean, are they exceptions to the rule? They're special people that they're better than the rest of us. And there's something that's really, wrong and unjust, I think, about people thinking that they're so much better and smarter than other people that they have some sort of moral authority and right to tell them what choices they can and cannot make for themselves.
So do libertarians believe in elected officials, like popular vote?
We do. We do definitely believe in democracy. We believe that, you know, a government is only just by the consent of the governed. And really, you know, if you want to elect a government that's going to do weird things, you know, that's your deal. The whole issue is that you do want to protect certain freedoms. Like, we have a constitution in this country that says that no matter who you elect, no matter how whacked out nutty they are, I mean, if you're in Virginia and electing David Duke, it doesn't matter. David Duke can never take away your freedom of speech.
Mm-hmm.
He can never take away, you know, your freedom to be, your Fourth Amendment rights to not have unreasonable searches.
Mm-hmm.
He can never take away any of their constitutionally protected rights.
Well, unreasonable searches are getting taken away thanks to the Patriot Act.
Well, yes, the Patriot Act is evil, and John Ashcroft is evil. A scary, scary man. I actually talked to a guy down at the Capitol this last weekend. There was a big protest rally. It was actually an open-air rave to protest the Rave Act, which I don't know if you'd heard about.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah.
That's pretty lame.
Where they can essentially treat any electronic dance music function as a crack house. So if anyone there has any drugs, then all of a sudden the promoter's liable and can be fined. And basically, you know, it's taking away the livelihood of all these really great artists.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not able to get gigs anymore. The promoters aren't able to set anything up.
A gathering place for young people, which I really think there's not enough of
anymore. Yeah, yeah. There's apparently too much peace, love, you know, unity and respect in the world, and so they need to just smash it down. But we were out there, and I ran into a guy who runs a little nonprofit down in D.C. It's the Flex Your Rights Foundation, and what they do is actually train people to exercise their Fourth Amendment rights.
Okay.
Like, for example, most people, if I'm, you know, you're driving down the road, Jen. I'm a cop, and I pull you over, and he goes, woo, doo-doo-doo-doo. And I come up to your car, and I tap on your window. And
yes,
I say, officer. you know, you were going pretty fast back there.
I didn't realize it.
Okay. Can I see your license and registration, please?
No.
No, you have to give me your license
okay.
and registration.
Okay, fine. I'll give it to you.
And what the officer will typically do next is he'll kind of look at you and say, do you have any drugs in your car?
Yes. No.
And you'd say no. I said, well, that's great. Do you mind? Obviously, you don't mind if I look around, do you? And the average person sitting at, you know, on the side of the road, their license is out of their hand. The officer's like staring them down. He's being really nice and reasonable. He's going to say, oh, okay. And the officer's going to search your car. And you've just consented to a search that officer has no right to do. Your Fourth Amendment right lets you say, basically,
no,
I'm...
Same thing on campus.
Right.
You don't have to let your RAs in. I learned that the hard way.
You don't have to do...
Although underagers, you shouldn't be drinking, but, you know, you don't have to let the RA in when they're knocking on the door.
The Fourth Amendment lets you keep your private stuff private.
Mm-hmm.
It lets you say, you know, I don't consent to a search of my car, you know. The officer's stopping you walking down the street, and he's like, you know, you got anything in your backpack? And you go, no. And he says, well, can I look? The answer is no.
Do you think officers are trained to respect people's rights? Because what if there's like officer brutality? Because I'd be afraid to say no.
Well,
they're going to beat me up.
They are trained to get people to consent to searches. That is in the training. I have some friends who are Baltimore cops, and they are told all sorts of ways to sort of use their authority to get you to consent to a search that you don't have to consent to. Because once you consent to it, anything they find in there can be used as evidence. If you say politely, you know, no, thank you, I don't consent to a search, officer, am I free to go, you're exercising your rights. And the worst possible thing is that the officer is going to search your bag anyway. But you know what that's just done for you? It's like a legal condom. Anything he finds in that bag, you're protected from because he unlawfully searched it.
Yeah, that is completely true. And we're going to just take one short break. We'll be right back.